This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome to the Pleasure Positive Podcast, the ultimate destination for a life filled with pleasure. Join us as we explore the vast landscape of pleasure, from the tantalizing to the transformative. This isn't just a podcast. It's a journey into the joyous realms of life's most delightful experiences. We're here to break down barriers, challenge norms, and open up conversations about the incredible world of pleasure. Expect insightful interviews with experts, everyday adventurers, and anyone embracing the extraordinary in the ordinary. Discover how pleasure isn't just a luxury, but a fundamental part of your well-being. Subscribe now to the Pleasure Positive Podcast and embark on a voyage where pleasure is not just celebrated, it's a way of life. Welcome to the Pleasure Positive Podcast.
Ooh, I want pleasure. Yeah.
Hello, clitorati and pleasure seekers around the world. Today, we're joined by the incredible Todd Krieger, an experienced relationship therapist, renowned sex expert, and speaker extraordinaire. With over 30 years in the field, Todd is a beacon of hope for couples. He specializes in everything from overcoming infidelity to providing trauma healing through EMDR therapy, which I'm doing right now. It's awesome. So let's talk about passion today. Todd has had a 90% success rate in helping couples thrive after infidelity. In his Orange County marriage therapy practice, he emphasizes the importance of a healthy sex life as the glue that gets you through tough times. So get ready for an insightful episode as we dive into the secrets of reigniting passion and maintaining a sizzling connection with the incredible Todd Krieger. Please welcome him now.
Thank you. That's quite an introduction, Madison. Love it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here. We were chatting a little bit before we pressed the record button, and we were just sharing how all three of us as hosts are married now. Katie's not with us, but we're all married. I'm the newlywed in the bunch. And
months.
I know. I'm just a baby wife. And one of the messages we get the most from our listeners and from the people that participate in our programs is long-term spark. How to keep it going, how to reignite it if it's gone out, what do you do if there's mismatched desire, right? And so let's just write it. How can couples start to address these situations where one partner may not feel the desire for intimacy? That's a very common one for us.
It is a common one, and that's what I do. I've been doing it for decades. It says over 30, but it's now over 40, a little over 40 years. All right. I have to update the website. Just a little over 40. I started very young. When I wrote my book, The Long Hot Marriage, and that came out in 2008, there's not a whole lot. I could probably use the same book. I was a professor since then. I'd probably use some fancier words, but other than that, it's really, we just don't have a role model. Usually our parents, grandparents really didn't have long, hot marriages, alive, passionate marriages. So we've been dancing in the dark. So the first thing I like to do with couples is take the judgment out of it. If they're struggling with passion, to not beat themselves up, to not blame themselves, to not blame their partner. The truth is in almost anything that we do that's challenging, we have teachers. I just started taking golf. I'm a late bloomer, and I'm taking a lot of golf lessons, and I'm starting to hit the ball. Without a golf teacher, I'd be stuck. And if you're doing what you guys do, you've been trained, and I've been trained. We've all been trained to do what we do. And if you're going to be a passionate partner in a sexy long-term marriage, you got your ancestors, your parents. So most of us are in trouble when it comes to this. So we got to be open to new things. A lot of really what makes couple's tick is to be open to learning. That before we thought about anything, you got to be open to learning. You have to have a growth mindset and a humble eye of things I need to learn. So a lot of times when couples come to see me, and usually even more problems than men who have such a, they feel like they need to have their act together. My job is to give them permission not to have their act together. So that's always the start of it. That's always the start, to just soften up. You're in class. It's okay. You have things to learn. And then from there, we could talk about all the specifics that the three of us could talk about. But it's got to start with helping them realize that, okay, this is about learning these things that maybe nobody told them. Yeah. Like to even be inquisitive, why do I have low sexual desire and I don't know it? Or why do you, my partner, have low sexual desire? Let's get interested. One of my favorite words when I work with couples is curiosity. So that's what I'm saying. That's always the first step. Let's get curious. There's a lot of answers to that question. Depends on what the situation is. For some people, low sexual desire has to do with genetics. Probably not, but sometimes. But it could definitely be about hormones. It could be about the relationship. It could be about they just have their own specific sexual brakes and accelerators that nobody knows about. Mm-hmm. Be a lot of things.
So yeah. Tell me more about that, the brakes and accelerators. What do you mean by
this? Everybody has different things that turn them on. Some people have, and this actually comes from Emily Nagoski. She wrote a book, Come As You Are, which is a really excellent book, and I'll be honest, I still haven't read the whole thing. It's pretty big, but it's a great book. I take those words and I've used it a lot since I read it, that chapter actually. But some people have like high sexual accelerators. It doesn't take much to get them going. Some people have high sexual brakes. It takes them not much to stop if things aren't just right. Some people have high sexual brakes. Yeah. And it's all, I love the title, Come As You Are, because it's again, it's about us accepting. And then we got to work it out. We got to figure it out. You have high sexual brakes and low sexual accelerators. You might have low sexual brakes and high sexual accelerators. So we got to work it out. The person who has high sexual accelerators maybe needs to place boundaries on themselves. They might be the ones to act out more quickly, but we want to learn what it is. For many women, when talking about especially in a heterosexual relationship, one of the biggest accelerators for women are to feel close emotionally, especially in a long-term relationship. And so whereas women tend to be more kinesthetically stimulated to become passionate, men could be more visually stimulated. These are all generalizations, but there's some truth in it.
Right. Yeah.
And so the man going, what's wrong? And she says, you've gone all day and you come home, you don't talk to me all night. Then we're about to go to bed and you want to have sex. I don't want to have sex with you. I don't even know who you are today. I haven't talked to you since Thursday or whatever.
Yeah. So that doesn't turn me on. And so what are one of the, I think a really common one that we hear is in a heteronormative relationship, my husband wants to have sex with me, but I don't feel sexy. I don't feel good in my body. I'm too self-conscious. Do you have any?
Right.
That's like the number one. I can relate to that. I think a lot of people can relate to that one. Do you have any strategies that can be, you know, employed to bridge the gap?
That's a great question. I deal with that a lot. Of course, oftentimes I would see a person who objectively there's nothing wrong with them and nobody would think so. And yet they feel that way. So of course I tend to do a history and want to see where that might come from. They might have had some critical parents that never felt good enough, or maybe she had a mom that judged herself, not even the daughter, and took in that. So there's a lot of challenging those ideas and those beliefs and to confront those fears and confront those negative ideas and to act oftentimes in opposition to those ideas, despite the fact there's all the things I've done EMDR with people where you find that their trauma is they never felt enough, period. And oftentimes when I find people who have a poor body image, they don't feel good about themselves, they're seeing things distorted, that it's not just in that area, it's in other areas. And so we might do some EMDR to help them look at where that comes from and to help them use their own internal resources to process those traumas, eye movements, I always do that, to help them move through it so that suddenly they feel good. Like when I was seven and my mom says, or my friend, could be a friend, said, "You're so ugly." It's all I can take for some people. We're right. 7 years old. Someone says, you're ugly. And we go back. You don't have a good body. We float back to an early age when you had that. And then suddenly they said, when I was seven, my friend who was really popular and all the boys liked her, even at seven, and said I was ugly. And so we process that memory. That can be really like a quantum leap oftentimes into that. Or if somebody was molested, I'm just thinking right. out loud here, but yeah. oftentimes they associate body with shame because they were treated badly. And so it internalizes, I'm bad, or my body's bad. So those are kinds of things that can really help. So those are some of the trauma-based stuff that I get into yeah. and help people sometimes.
I mean, this is blowing my mind right now because I think that especially for a lot of women, there's this narrative that, oh, culture has told us to look a certain way. So I think in a sense, a lot of women have just learned to live with this body shame or this body politics mm-hmm. conversation, thinking that this is just the card that society has dealt with. I don't know if I've ever really considered the fact that it could be a trauma response that you could actually heal with therapy.
Could.
Yeah.
It could. But, you know, I'm not denying, I'm not minimizing that there's cultural aspects. In some ways, I've noticed personally that's gotten better. I've seen, you know, when you see people, models that used to be only one specific shape, really thin, I've seen much more variety. So hopefully that's improving some, but we're still, women especially, are still left with these kinds of cultural ideas. So I'm not denying what you're saying too. It could be that yeah. as well. And then we have to challenge that.
Yeah. No, I'm almost excited. I'll just get a little personal. I did have a mother who was very critical of herself, not of me. She always told me I was beautiful, always, but was very critical of herself. And I do think that I've inherited that a bit. So I'm almost excited at the thought of being able to maybe do some EMDR sessions and not pass this on to my daughter. And it does it
absolutely
impact
can
my
happen
sex life. Yeah. So, I'm like, wow, that's exciting information.
Such good information. Good. That's fit. It makes a lot of sense, too. It does. And for our women that listen to the show, I think that body image is a big part of it. And for the men, I feel that it's their struggle is related to the body, but it's more of a performance struggle. Mm-hmm. Like they feel that they maybe aren't having sex that often with their wife. And so when they do, they're very excited and they can't last as long as they'd like to. And then therefore they can't have the experience of giving their wife multiple orgasms and extended pleasure. And ultimately they want to feel like a sex god, but they're having, I would love to know if you have any techniques or exercises or mindset advice that can help men overcome this pressure in the bedroom to perform, whether it manifests as ejaculating prematurely or not being able to maintain an erection. Yeah, any insight would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, no, this is another area that I work with a lot. I actually enjoy that area because I watch the men going, they never thought that sex is not about performance, which it really is not designed to be about performance. We have so many myths about sex, and like the sex is all about it's not about connection. It's about how hard my penis can be and what I could do with it. And that's a lot of pressure, especially when we know that the one thing that really decreases erections and increases premature ejaculation is stress. Maybe the thing we need to do is learn how to feel safe with ourselves. So I talk a lot about self-compassion and kindness. I once did a YouTube video. I don't know. I just think of these things sometimes. And I said, okay, guys, this is all about sexual performance anxiety, mainly erections. But I said, it was about erections. And I said, what I want you to do is when you go have sex with your partner, your goal is to lose and gain your erection 7 times. So purposely lose it if you don't lose it, and then try to gain it. And so I would say this to a client, and they go, lose and gain it 7 times. It's, oh my God, if I lose it, I'm done. That's it. And we don't have sex for another 2 weeks because I want to avoid feeling that way. I go, no, you need to, if you lose it, that's great. Because then you could practice gaining, and your wife or your girlfriend's got to be in on this whole thing. And usually I'll ask them to come in the session maybe and say, I want you to be in on this. And your job is to lose and gain 7 times. I guarantee you it never lasts, never goes to 7. But right. Even if it goes to 3, by that time, it's not a big deal. So then they could have sex and it's not a problem. So that's one thing that I might do. Mm. But a lot of it is the mindset, as you were saying, Madison, the mindset is to change the goal. The goal for men is to have an erection. It's a terrible goal. It's like the goal going to sleep, trying to go to sleep. You can't control going to sleep and you can't control having an erection. But you sure can practice being totally tuned in and enjoying your partner's skin or enjoying touching and practice connecting, which a lot of these guys, by the time they've come to see me, they haven't enjoyed connecting in a while because sex is all about performance. And then every once in a while, they do it and they feel good, but it's not, they feel relief. They're not really feeling the sexual pleasure. They feel, I did it. I didn't fail this time. But so I help them try to shift into that, that it's all about connection, tuning in. And I would even say, I hope you're not successful right away so that you learn this. If you're successful too fast, maybe you'll get a little lucky. So I use a little paradox, but the bottom line is I want them to go in with that attitude too, that it's what's important is connection. It's a lot of conditioning we need to decondition. It's been,
yeah.
It's a lot of the myths that we have to challenge.
What I like about this so much is, and I think that this happens to men in particular when they get older, when you're in your 20s, it's very easy to instantly get that rock hard erection, and they associate mm-hmm. that with being turned on, versus when you're in your 40s or above, it might take a little bit of kissing. And I think that for women, because yes. it's taken us an average of 20 minutes to get turned on our whole fucking lives, we're conditioned for that. And when men make that transition, they think, oh, I'm not horny, because they're not instantly turned on the way that they used to.
Right.
And so for go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I just thought of I'm working with a couple right now where the presenting problem was that he can't commit to marriage, and now he doesn't want to, and he hasn't wanted to have sex with me for the last 3 years of our marriage. Of our relationship. They're not engaged. And so, he was talking about the pressure that she put on him after 3 years. I want to get married. We've been together 3 years. And he said, and after a while, I don't know, I just lost my interest. He says, we're just not compatible sexually. So that's what he thought the problem was. And as we explored it, in the last session or two, it came clear to me that what happened was he was feeling the pressure. He has some anxiety. He's an obsessive, compulsive kind of guy that wants things a certain way. And so the idea of marriage is scary for him. And he probably went to have sex with his partner, who he didn't have problems before, but he felt that pressure and he couldn't get it up. And that was the beginning of him losing his sexual desire. He didn't lose his sexual desire. What he did was avoid the pain of performance failure. And when I said that, because they'd gone to a bunch of therapists and they'd go one time and stop. When I said that, he said, oh, shit. That's fucking it. So anyway, hopefully we'll get somewhere with him. We'll see.
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, that happens a lot.
So good. That's so good. We have a lot of people that come to us to reignite the spark in their relationship, to get that passion back. And maybe they're having sex not that often, but they love each other still, and they just really want to reignite that romance. So how can partners do this? How can they maintain this sense of novelty and excitement in their long-term relationship? And are there any practical tips or
exercises for couples who are looking to bring back that spark?
No, I wrote another book called Love, Sex, and Karaoke, 52 Ways to Ignite Your Love Life. But I haven't read my book in so long, I can't remember exactly what I said. But every weekend, they were supposed to do something. But I do remember something. And it stems from easy, even non-sexual things, right? Being like connecting in their pain. I call them PIPs, becoming partners in pain. That they need to be able to learn how to connect through pain. Because sometimes when we have pain and our pain becomes stronger than our connection, it destroys our sex life. But if I can make my connection stronger than my pain, meaning I'll look at you even when I'm sad. I'll talk, use words. I will touch you. I've had people when they're angry, say, okay, you're angry, look at your partner and touch. I don't want to touch my boy. I know. But you got to make your connection even stronger than your pain. So that's one thing that I would have them do is to practice developing the emotional muscle to stay connected to their pain. You guys are communication people. So that's what we want to do is help them not break contact anytime they have any kind of angry feelings or hurt feelings or fear feelings. So that's one thing. The other thing, though, is becoming playful. We now know that a nervous system was created to play and that when we feel safe, which we can feel safe by learning to be PIPs, partners in pain, that we could also learn how to, we need to play. And it's even non-sexual play. Like my wife and I started taking dance lessons. Actually, this dance lesson over Zoom. This is a Ukrainian champion ballroom dancer. And with my daughter's getting married, so that was our motivation to do it. Aww. But we're going to do it beyond the wedding, which is going to be in June of this year. But we started dancing. And she's in a meeting. I'm in a meeting. After this, we're going to do our dance practice. And that's playful. And sometimes we mess up and we laugh. And sometimes we get it right and it's pretty cool. And it's a connection. And that is the beginning. That's foreplay. Mm-hmm. It's all foreplay. We got to be. Yeah. A lot of couples stop playing when they had kids or when they got too busy. They haven't set aside time to play. And so I tell people, set aside time. I actually say set aside time, 10 minutes every day minimum to slow down together. And I say 10 minutes because even when you're busy, you can do 10 minutes just to slow down together. Maybe those 10 minutes of slowing down is being partners in pain. Maybe those 10 minutes is to just touch. And I'm not saying go right into crazy sex, just touch. You just slow down. You need to slow down. And I think that change of pace can oftentimes lead to a much better sex life. So those are the first things I think about.
Yeah. I love this concept of really expanding what we consider foreplay. Because if your relationship gets to a point where it's blatantly obvious we're not having sex and the pressure of that problem, but if you can start, then connection might completely go out, right? So if we can expand our definition of foreplay and just connect in other ways, we can bridge our way back to the sack.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You can bridge your way back to the sack. You can sing together. Yeah. You can dance together. And the problem with us is we're just, many people, I find the biggest block is they live in their comfort zone. They just live in comfort and they avoid being uncomfortable. And I always say to them, think of one area of your life that you've been successful in where you didn't have some discomfort. If you have a healthy body, usually you exercise. And when you exercise to the point where you're a little uncomfortable, yoga, you don't do yoga and not be any uncomfortable. If you're totally comfortable doing yoga, don't do yoga, right? If you're successful financially, you take a risk. You guys have taken some risks. You get to the point where you're uncomfortable. It's the same in our relationship. You got to take some chances, even if the chance is the inhibited partner goes to the other person and says, okay, let's sing some songs together. I mean, I'll start with some people.
That's and so then great. I love this. So we're expanding our definition of foreplay. The other thing that I want to talk about is, especially in long-term relationships, I think the art of seduction or creating a sensual environment goes out the window. Mm-hmm. I would say even for me right now, I'm a newlywed. I've been with my husband for 5 years. We've already fallen into a routine. I don't even know how to seduce. I'm like, hey, want to go have sex? Like, that's very sexy. And right. if you're, I think a lot of times we forget. And so if you're in the inquiry of how do you rediscover what turns your partner on? Do you have any suggestions or tips for like how to relearn the art of seduction or yeah. discover what turns your partner on so you can even start that conversation?
In August, I will have been married 40 years.
Oh, wow.
And yeah.
Congratulations. That's amazing. That's an amazing accomplishment.
When you're at that age, you'll go, how did I get here? You'll feel the same way I do. Because I feel like I'm 25 sometimes, but I know I don't look 25 and I don't. I've been married much longer than 25. I asked her. The thing that I know my wife so well, because I've been married 40 years, is absolutely ridiculous. Because she's not the same person. I don't know what turned her on last week. Might be different than what turned her on today. And so maybe not. But so if I know what to do, I'll just go ahead and do it. But if I'm not, if I'm out of practice or not sure, I go, hey, what can I do to turn you on? It could be that simple. Now, sometimes I've had females say, oh, I don't want to have to tell him. I want him to just know. And I go, come on. That's not real life. So if I don't, I think that's one way is to just say, what is it that could turn you on? I think a lot of times though, we might know and we just slip into ruts and then we got to go, what did I used to do? So we could do that. What did we do when we were risking before we got too comfortable with each other? And so whatever you did with him back then, think about it because you did, I'm sure. And then you start doing that. But I think, or we could try something new. And I like to use the word experiment. Like we don't have to always get it right. So you could experiment with new ways. Of course, there's always, I tell people, I could tell you some things, but you could also Google. I have a lot of guys that say, I don't know what to do. I say, and I would Google. I go, oh, well, I have 10 ideas for you right now.
Use ChatGPT, how to turn on my wife.
ChatGPT,
that's what turns me on these days. ChatGPT turns me on so much.
How do I seduce my husband tonight? ChatGPT.
It's unbelievable.
And I wonder if part of this relationship spark and keeping the passion alive is also connected to the needs and desires and understanding each other's needs as desires as we evolve. And what I'm getting from what you're saying is we can change on a weekly basis or a daily basis. So I'm curious how much that plays into maintaining the passion in the relationship is just that communication around needs and desires, but also the difference in sexual desires, right? Like one partner, oftentimes something we hear or we've even experienced in our relationships is like one partner desiring sex more than the other. And then practical ways to disrupt the conversation. And I like how you said, what could I do to turn you on? And are there any other sort of like pattern interrupts for when couples are in a situation where there's desire differences?
I think the first step is to realize that there are desire differences. One of the things that we've come to realize is that there's all kinds of diversity out there, and including our sexual desire. We got to work with it. I think part of it is, let's say the person who wants sex less frequently, it might be that's who they are, but it also might be that we haven't figured out that she or he have not figured out what her sexual accelerators are because we haven't had a conversation about it. That's why communication is so important. We think we're supposed to just know it, or you're supposed to be just like me. And we start talking about, okay, so what might turn you on? The female might say, I don't know. That's why I like experimenting. Okay. I tend to approach you in the same way every single time. What if I approached you like this instead? And oftentimes maybe I've had men take a slower approach. Like the whole men are like, I don't know if you've heard this, but it says, men are like microwaves, women are like crock pots. That was true. Sometimes that's not true, but a lot of times it is true. And so the man has to get out of his orbit and be a crock pot and slow it down and see if and be able to tame his excitement so that she can get turned on and touch her in new ways. And that kind of thing. And of course, we talked earlier about women wanting to feel closer. Sometimes the problem is, I've said it this way, because John Gray, who wrote all the books, Men Are From Mars books, Women Are From Venus.
Yeah.
I've gotten to know him. He endorsed my book. I interviewed him about his book, and we talked a bunch of times. But one of the things he told me was that, in the research for one of his books, was that men and women, even though we have masculine, female aspects of ourselves, all of us, we're not just masculine and not just feminine, is typically, for most women, the hormones that get them happy is estrogen and oxytocin. And for men, what gets them happy is testosterone. And so what gets them sexual is testosterone, which women gets sexual estrogen and oxytocin. So the question then is, what raises a man's testosterone? He said, feeling successful and being appreciated. And what raises a woman's oxytocin and estrogen? Planned romance. That doesn't mean going to some kind of Hallmark store on February 14th for Valentine's Day, but planned romance and also sharing feelings. That's what the research said. I don't know how good that research was, but it seems right on. So the man is not... right?
What was the inciting idea behind these responses in terms of what turns them on?
What raises their estrogen and oxytocin, which ultimately they found is what gets them turned on and happy and high energy. And so the man is not hormonally, the man is not hormonally driven to share feelings. So I say to the man, yes, but you are hormonally driven to feel successful. And when you practice doing this thing you're not very good at, which is locating your feelings and sharing it and being interested in your partner's feelings, our oxytocin and estrogen go up. And then when our oxytocin and estrogen go up, she's going to smile at you more. She's going to appreciate you more. You're going to feel successful because you see her face. She's going to have sex with you more. You're going to feel more. Then your testosterone goes up. So that's the way it's got to be.
When my husband doubled his income, we started having more sex. Because we've been together for going into 10 years. Yes. And so around 4 years, we hit a little bit of like we were having sex much less than we originally were in the beginning of the relationship. And that was also around a time where he took like a massive pay gap and drop when he wasn't making any money.
You got it. Yeah.
And it's great. It's true. I think I find it to be true. And I, for myself, with feelings, when it's something that I've shared with my partner of, I just want to feel your heart. So he's a pilot. So he'll call me from off on his, and he'll tell me all of these logistical things and what he did but not how he felt and what he did. And so it goes in through one ear and out the other. And I'm like, oh, cool. And I just want to, and then I'm like, so, how's your heart? Is something I'll ask him. I'll just be like, how's your heart? And then it'll drop him into, oh yeah, I'm feeling this. And it will be more of the what's in his mind rather than what he was doing. And so I find that to be like a good way to shift him into his feelings without making him wrong.
Good.
But another thing that we've really found with our listeners, our male listeners, is definitely I think that they appreciate our programs and opportunities when we do live workshops and trainings, because we create such a safe container to dive deep into the feelings. And it's always interesting. It's always like these little focus groups when we're with our community of just all the different pleasure seekers across the world, and to see what they're dealing with, and to see the women very easily sharing how they feel, coming off of mute, going right into it. No, that's what they were born to do. And then the men doing a great job at witnessing and watching, but then just like that, like watching others feel it and maybe having a more difficult time with feeling it. So we really advocate that space for men to create the space to feel your feelings. And I'm just curious what you found like changes over the years of like over the 40 years of being in practice around that toxic masculinity, where men are undoing that programming of what it is to be manly and masculine, and that's transitioned into more heart-centered masculinity.
Exactly. That's well said, Madison. She was a hypnotherapist and I was a therapist, and we were going to do this program together, and we both got too busy, but actually it was on this, and I actually had a website called themodernmasculineman.com, and we were looking at what men, and she was frustrated because she was a very attractive, very successful women who divorced her husband who was on drugs, and she couldn't find, like 16 years, she goes, men kept getting intimidated by her because she had this strength about her and everything. And we talked about that in the 1950s, which was before even our 1958, but the typical masculine thing to do was to bring home a paycheck. And now, first of all, you have a lot of couples where the woman is making as much or more than the man. I've had stay-at-home dads. So the stay-at-home dads, like, how could I make her feel feminine? And I've seen this over and over. The most masculine thing a man can do is to become a good listener. That is the most masculine thing a man can do. To tune in and to share and to not always be strong. That there's a strength in being vulnerable. And so I love what you guys do to creating that safe space that at least allows them to go deeper, because the truth of the matter is men have as many feelings as women. They really do. We're all made of the same stuff. So I think that's really great. So I just try to help them reinforce it. That's what it takes to be masculine, is to be good listeners, to be interested, to be curious, all those words. And to make the women feel like she matters and she's significant. Not how much money you make, it's how much I'm gonna say money doesn't. The money helps, but it's really about attention and about tuning in and slowing down and all the things that none of us men were taught is important, but it's very important.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's so beautifully said. I think that there's a lot. I think a lot of times too with our male listeners, there's a sense of frustration. Right. If they're not having a banging sex life, that there's something wrong. And so do you have any advice to, because I understand the sort of friction. If you're coming at your partner, like there's something wrong, we need to fix our sex life, you might be met with resistance. How do they, how can they work through that frustration, acknowledging it is a frustrating thing, but that frustration isn't useful? How can they work through that frustration and start utilizing some of the things we've talked about today?
It is everything we've talked about today. It's instead of going around judging myself or judging the relationship or judging you, I come at it, maybe it's the way it is for reasons. And it's not that we're bad. Let's get curious. Let's be interested. Let's ask some questions of each other. Let's be beginner's mind, like the meditation, beginner's mind. And let's try experimenting. Let's see what happens rather than I'm supposed to have it. We're supposed to have our ass together. It's just not true.
And so for some people that maybe aren't coming, don't have as much trauma, they can communicate through that. But for example, if someone is very frustrated, they can't work through that and they have a trigger and now their partner, it triggers their trigger. And now there's a double trigger. We have two blaring radio stations, as Lindsay calls it, talking to each other.
Two radio stations blaring at each other.
when a relationship is affected by trauma, what resources or strategies do you recommend for couples to navigate and then heal together if they can't maybe foster the sense of safety they need to have a conversation to work through it? And maybe does EMDR therapy play a role in addressing trauma within the context of a relationship?
You guys are asking I've been in a lot of interviews, but you guys ask some heck of a good questions. And
thank you.
That sometimes you guys talk about what you just said. One, when I can't remember how you said it, but I say
blaring radio.
Yeah, my wounded blaring radio stations blaring at each other. Yeah, my wounded part is fighting with your wounded part. So because us people that deal with trauma, we understand the importance of the concept of parts. We have different parts. So I might have an adult part that loves you and listens to you. But when it seems like you don't want to have sex with me again, I become really childlike and I pout or I have a temper tantrum. That might be a younger part of me that feels not good enough. And maybe that comes from when I was younger. And the other person may be avoiding me because she doesn't feel good about her body, which comes from some things we talked about. Maybe my mother didn't feel good about her body, or maybe I got messages that men are not to be trusted. And we start to look at some of these things. EMDR definitely can help. And sometimes what I do is when I'm seeing the couple, I'm not going to work like 10, 15 sessions with one person. But what I would do is work with them for 3 or 4 and then the other one, and then get them back together so that their wounded parts are not running the show anymore. They're not taking over. They're not hijacking. And so now as an adult, I'm not getting triggered like I was before. So I do think that there's a place for, I've been using EMDR, not always, but a lot when I work with couples, because I see, I have one man I just saw now. He would, his wife is large and in charge kind of person, and he just freezes. And so he freezes, and then she feels like he's boring. And they start being a little overly flirty with another couple of guys. And she didn't act it out too much. He actually, once she did. And so we were dealing with all that, even though that happened a long time ago. I saw him alone. We went back to his father. When his father was mad, he would, him and everybody else in the household would freeze. And I had him go back and helped him start to, instead of freeze, say what he needed to say to his dad. And I just saw him today, so it's on my mind. He came back, he goes, I didn't get tested in my marriage, but my boss and I looked at him in the eye and I didn't feel like he was above me. And I, so whatever, we did something, right? And so we did a little more work on that today. But that's an example, and it can work in the sexual there as well. If a person kind of shuts down to protect themselves, their libido shuts down. The other person gets angrier and says, what's wrong with you? What's the matter with you? I'm pretty, or I'm handsome, and what's wrong with you? Why don't you? And now they freeze even more, and then you get even angrier, and it escalates. So we need to recognize that these are just ways people are trying to feel safe, and sometimes the way I feel safe makes you feel more unsafe, and it escalates. So we need to understand that and then work it from there.
People are so exhausting.
They are. Relationships are really tough.
Man,
this is coming from a guy who's been married almost 40 years.
I just want to heal my childhood wounds, be rich and in the best shape of my life, is that, and have a thriving sex life. Is that just too much to ask for?
No.
Not at all.
Oh, man.
Just take it slow.
No. Yeah.
It is. Look, I've said this to people. I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm more optimistic now than I used to be about relationships. I do think that even though there's a lot of challenges and trauma, that we also have an amazing capacity to be resilient and to overcome and to be courageous. We need courage in relationships. You know, these intimate relationships, they are not for the faint of heart. We need to be courageous. We can't stay comfortable.
The theme of our new season is resilience. It's pleasure resilience. So how that shows up. And
what does it take to cultivate it and maintain it? Hmm? It's so funny. That was actually in my wedding vows, and I was sharing my wedding vows with these girls, and I used the word resilience. And it, our other co-host, Katie, it really stuck for her. She said, I've never heard that word used in a wedding vow, because I said something to the effect of, I thought I wanted a playful adventure, but what I really needed was safety, stability, and resilience, which ironically has been the greatest adventure of my life.
That's right.
And they have a very adventurous relationship. I have been to many of music festivals with her and her husband.
We do have a lot of fun
as
too.
Their festival child. You know, inside of that safety and that secure attachment that bond that they've created, there is so much adventure and play and self-expression. And as they're newlyweds, my husband and I have been married for a minute now, and they've been inspiring me. That newlywed energy is like just, it's so contagious, you know, of just that playfulness.
Great, yeah.
And my husband and I actually went on a very spontaneous getaway trip, which they didn't realize, they were slightly inspired to just be playful. And I said something, Austin, my partner, Lindsay said something to me that her and her partner were sharing with me, that sometimes when they're driving, one of them will be like, oh, there's traffic. And then the other one's, as long as we're together, this is going to be so fun. We're with each other. And then from there, there's like, they start playing and laughing and making jokes and telling stories. And when I was on this road trip with my partner this weekend, that came up where my husband was like, ooh, it looks like there's traffic. We're going to be in the car for an extra 45 minutes. I'm like, I'm so excited. You've been gone all week. Like, we finally get we stuck in the car for 3 hours together.
Tell me that.
I know, I forgot because we talk about so many other things. But yeah, I got to bring that line in. And he was like, aw. And it was such a quick little shift because, first of all, he wasn't expecting me to say that. Mm. It was like that pattern interrupt.
Pattern interrupt.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah.
So good. So fun. Good.
I love that. I love it. That.
See, you inspired, the newlywed inspired the slightly longer married person.
We are newlyweds, but we both are old enough to have been married once before. It's a first marriage for both of us. There are pros in getting married older.
I have a funny brag. We have an amazing poly sex therapist because my husband and I are polyamorous. And shout out to Kate Lohr. One day I want you, we'll have her on the show. So Kate Lohr is our sex and relationship therapist. And I had my EMDR session with her last week. And at the beginning of the session, she's like, how are you? And I was like, I just can't not tell you this because it's such a huge win. We started working with a sex therapist for the pure desire to have more quality sex together. Really simple. And in that journey, so much unearthed, and I'm now doing EMDR, which is so profound, and he's going to be doing EMDR as well.
Wow.
And we'll have to do a whole episode just on EMDR. We're not going to go too much into what that is right now.
Yeah, but that could be a whole
basically,
episode.
I shared with her, I was like, so my husband and I went out of town this weekend, and we found an Airbnb that had a two-person jet bathtub inside of the suite.
Nice.
And so we've never done this before. In the 10 years of being together, we went to CVS. We got Dr. Teal's bubble bath because that's all they had. And we accidentally put too much bubbles in the bubble bath. The bubbles were like, we were in the bubble bath making beards on each other and like putting the bubbles on my titties. And then that play... It ended up getting really hot. It was like this hottest bath. I mean, there was sex in the bath. And so I bragged about this to my therapist because I was just like, what a bitch move if I didn't tell my therapist that I had some of the hottest sex with my husband that I've ever had. So I was like, by the way, I hate to give it to you. You've been very effective. We had a great time. Also, highly recommend a two-person jet bubble bath if you want to spice things up with your...
My husband is 6'4", so it'd have to be a very big bath for
maybe
us.
Maybe you need a four-person jet.
We need like
bath.
A jacuzzi, yeah. Anyways, Todd, thank you so much for coming on and having and really sharing your years of professional experience and 40 years of marriage. I think if you want to know how to make a marriage work, speak to someone who's been married for 40 years. And it just really... Thank you. I had some really big aha moments in this episode, to be honest, and I'm really excited. I know that you have a practice in Orange County and you've written some incredible books. What is the best way which we will obviously link in the show notes for everybody. We mentioned a few of them in this episode. What is the best way for people to get in touch with you, follow you, any new endeavors that you're having? Sure. How can people work with you? All that jazz. Yeah.
All of the above. The best, my website is my name. So Todd Creager, TODBCREAGER.com. I have a YouTube channel that has some great YouTube videos. Yeah, I have the podcast, Love, Sex, and Infidelity podcast they've all had lots of shows and it's been great. And I work virtually. As a matter of fact, I only work virtually now. It works for me.
So anyone in the world can work with Todd.
Anybody in the world, anywhere in the world, as long as I only know English, other than that. And my newest project is I'm doing a video program called Healing Infidelity from the Inside Out. And I'm very excited about it. It's all centered around developmental trauma and then how to heal from that and how it helped the couples thrive. I'm doing it now and that's become a book too. I haven't had a book in a while. So.
Wow.
And that's good.
We'll have to have you come back to talk about that book when it comes out too.
Now you inspired me to get moving. I am moving on it, but like even more moving on it. So yeah. And so my email is todd@toddkreager.com too. So it's really easy.
Perfect.
Anybody can communicate me through my website and check out all the blogs and the videos and all that.
Yeah. And we are pleasure coaches. We are huge fans of therapy, couples therapy, sex, couples therapy.
Yeah.
It really has. I would not be married without therapy. It's really highly recommended. And
I would not still be married without therapy. I'd be out.
Yes.
Yeah. Amazing.
You guys are great. You guys are doing great work and it's been a blast. So
awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll put everything for our listeners in the show notes, and we hope that this conversation made a difference for you. Like I said, I've never seen Madison take notes during an episode before.
I've been diligently. It's been so long since it's been.
In 300 episodes, I've never had to take notes in an episode, Todd.
It's really been like,
an incredible episode. I'm so grateful that you came on. Thank you for making the time to come on our show. Maybe one day we can come on your show.
Yes, absolutely.
I think you will.
All right.
Okay.
Love
we'll
it.
Talk
All
about
right.
it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Clitorati. And with that, we'll see you next Tuesday.